All right, we are. You're here. You should. You're hearing me now, right?
I hear you fine.
Okay, and I hear you fine too. Okay, and Tor, you're good?
I'm fantastic.
Okay.
he's a hot spot today. He's a hot spot in the room, which is freezing now because I opened the door and you shut down the heat.
I turned the heat down. Now we're freezing in here.
It's a little chilly.
Because it felt a little claustrophobic, and it's hard to feel claustrophobic. I tend to feel claustrophobic in lots of different situations.
I know you do. I've been with you in those situations.
Right. So remember we were climbing a pyramid in Mexico, and it was in Chichen Itza. And I had the opportunity to follow you and Cheryl and
and
the whole line of tourists going in through this tiny entrance into the inside of the pyramid.
Yes.
And to crawl through this bat infested tunnel with that was 110 degrees. And with guano dripping,
kind of damp.
Yeah, guano dripping all over us in the dark. With
I don't
one
recall one bat, but
one
go ahead.
Shining light bulb at the end.
That's pretty much true. Yes,
to see and what we were going to see. The goal was to see the sacred leopard. I believe
jaguar.
The jaguar, of course. Yes.
Or a jaguar for our British listeners.
And isn't a jaguar a type of leopard? I think.
Well, was it a what?
A type of leopard.
Well, it was not so much a type of leopard. It
not
was,
that one, but I mean in general.
In general.
In biology, in zoology.
I cannot answer specifically, no. But I know I think that there was a type of leopard that was supposedly around in that part of the world at that time.
And this sacred jaguar was... Yes. Made of jewels, and there was an emeralds for its eyes in the interior of this this tomb, this pyramid, and I couldn't go in because it was such a confined space.
It was confined.
I felt very claustrophobic, and this was hard for me on several levels. First of all, just the claustrophobia was bothersome, but it was hard because it challenged why I travel.
You know,
here I am at this remarkable opportunity to see this incredible thing, and I was having trouble doing it simply because of a thing inside my head that made me feel uncomfortable about claustrophobia. But
right,
so I should be able to do this. I should find ways to overcome that. But here's the cultural thing. This whole thing talks about travel. And the things that stop us from travel and the things that allow us to travel and what we expect once we get there. And right now we're in a situation where we're entering the possibility of traveling again.
Well, right. And you're talking about it fairly soon.
I am traveling tomorrow, actually, or Monday. Today is Saturday, so
yes.
Right.
And that makes you face another situation not totally unlike the situation in Chichen Itza to a degree anyway, in the sense that you are more confined in an airplane. Now, does that do the same thing to you? And because of the circumstances?
No, I've never felt that way in an airplane.
Well, that's good because then it goes to, that would cause a lot of problems.
A lot of problems.
Yes.
Yeah. Never felt that way in a plane. No. Just the claustrophobia thing. I had it when I was walking up the Eiffel Tower. You know, you can take the elevator to the top of the Eiffel Tower, or you can walk
the
steps,
stairs,
right? And even though it's open, it's this open construction. Mm-hmm. It's like an erector set, right?
Yeah.
So you can walk it, and you don't feel claustrophobic. But I felt claustrophobic because there were people in front of me on this little narrow staircase, and there were people behind me. And so I felt like if I had to get out of here, I can't.
Yeah.
And so I felt very confined. So they turned several buildings in Auckland, New Zealand, into parachute jumps.
Mm.
These are down buildings in downtown Auckland where you can go up to the top of the building. Skyscrapers, you know, I don't know, 500 stories high or something.
That's a lot.
maybe I'm exaggerating.
I think we're in outer space at that point. But.
And you get to the top and you buy your ticket and you can either strap yourself into this parachute and step out on a ledge and be dropped down the side of the building into downtown Auckland.
Which so is are you a, on a parachute? It's not like a bungee cord or anything.
No, it's a bungee, actually. Oh, it is a bungee cord. It is a bungee. Oh, okay. But you still got to strap this thing around you, right?
Okay, yep.
And or you can stand there and watch people do it.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. So which one which one did I do?
I'm going to... You did it, didn't you? You did it. No, no, I'm wrong.
Listen back to our New Zealand episode.
Right. Yeah. We did talk about it. Remember we said we would go both go and jump. I think we said naked. If I'm remembering, I think we said naked off of there. So.
Yeah, in the original bungee... where they did it over a gorge, and you can go there. I think it's in Queensland.
Yeah.
Queenstown, New Zealand.
Okay.
You can do that. You can choose to jump naked if you want. And yeah. and when I was there, I didn't make that choice, but I was there.
And we're all grateful.
And they were announcing the fact that if nobody wanted to watch the next jumper because they were jumping naked, we're making the announcement now,
uh-huh.
so you don't have to watch.
Right.
Well, of course, everybody's watching.
Of course.
Well, thanks
Which
for
is another
thanks
reason
for
why
telling.
They made the announcement. Yeah, really. Right. Of course it is.
But I don't think you can jump naked in Auckland off the side of the
in
building.
In the city.
In the city. No, you have to. You have to have some self-pride, you know.
Okay.
When you land, you want to land dressed.
Okay. Well, maybe.
like James Bond and ready to pick up the martini and go to the cocktail party.
Yeah, with the tux on. Yes.
Start naked
nice.
And then end up with the tux on at the bottom.
That would be interesting.
That would be interesting. I would pay money to see that.
So here's the cultural thing, because okay. we're talking about culture.
All right. Well, we are. We hold on.
Wait, are we?
Wait a minute.
Well, we've mentioned three different cultures already.
We did.
Actually, four, because you got to consider your own culture whenever you think about culture.
That's a very good point.
Because my reactions to any of these three
would
be different.
You're just not
going to
let me finish here, are you?
If I weren't an American.
You know, there's a reason why you recognize there were four cultures there, because you are, after all, Dean Foster. And... from the podcast,
Oops! Your culture's showing. And you're Tom Peterson.
I am.
From the same podcast.
From the same podcast. Yeah, isn't that amazing?
And we have with us Torin.
Hello.
Yeah, and we are in studio. We are all together inside. Which is somewhat frightening and very wonderful at the same time.
For the last year, we have been habituated. Our nervous systems, our neurological wiring has been, changed. We had to develop new habits to survive with what we're speaking about COVID. And now we're vaccinated. All three of us are vaccinated. We're immunized.
Yep.
And they're telling us if you believe the science, which I think is an oxymoron. You can't believe science. You can know science, right?
You lost me on that one. But go ahead, because
belief is tied to faith, and faith has nothing to do with facts. But science is all about facts.
Well,
so
true.
So, you know, here are the facts.
But I can believe those who tell me the science.
Well, that's true. That's true. And you can deny the facts if you choose.
Sure.
But that would be irrationality.
Oh, that never happens in the United States.
And certainly people don't do that, right?
No.
We're completely and only rational beings, as economists will remind us.
Yes.
You know, don't do that. The economy is going to collapse if you do. It will do it anyway.
Oh, well.
You'll lose money anyway.
Yeah.
But...
Except I made a lot of money, so I don't care what you lost.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
So my point here.
Yes. Oh, wait, there's a point?
Well, there's a point. Is that something to do with culture? we had to acculturate to these different behaviors in order to survive.
I see.
And now we're told it's okay. If you've had your vaccination and the science and the facts say you can take the mask off, we can sit here, the three of us, in a room. And And it's a little strange. So we have this neurological reaction, a Pavlovian response that maybe this is dangerous because we've been told it's dangerous.
It's for the last year plus.
And we believed it was dangerous. And it did, and it was dangerous. Well, Facts are that it certainly was dangerous.
A lot of people have died. Yeah. So, and it's, and unfortunately, some people didn't treat it that way. But that's, but in our particular cases, and in most people's cases, I would say, they did, so it's a retraining.
We have to retrain ourselves. We have to slowly re-enter. I don't think we can jump right in. You know, there's the part of me that's very eager to, and then there's the part of me that's frightened to.
Sure.
And, you know, who you listen to, which the angel of a devil on either shoulder, you know, it's going to take some time. It takes some time.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the thing I'm noticing from just doing this is that it's nice to have the normalcy of it. Although, you know, it has a kind of shaky normalcy to it, like you're talking about. But it's also such feelings that we've lived with our whole lives until recently. So that's kind of wants to just go back there. But at the same time, it's their side of me that keeps saying, oh, wait, hold on. You're forgetting this, or did you do this, or shouldn't you be? Because that's what we've done constantly. It's habitual, if nothing else.
It's habitual, exactly. Right. You've had to create new habits. Mm-hmm. And the creation of a habit is a very neurological process.
Yeah.
And you can't just shut it off when you don't need the habit anymore.
Right, right. It's not for a while anyway.
Not for a while.
Are the withdrawal symptoms? I think the good news is the withdrawal symptoms aren't going to be that bad.
Well, they're certainly not as bad as the disease.
Not at all. So. Yeah. I think we can all agree on that one.
So I started thinking, you know, the positive side of me, the side that was not feeling threatened or put in danger because of the situation.
Yes.
The side was going, okay, let's open up and be open to this new world and these new possibilities. One of the first things I started to think about was like, where do I want to go?
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Of course I want to see friends and family, but beyond that, my career has been, you know, for over 30 years, basically on a plane,
right,
and traveling,
yep,
and talking about cultural differences. And for the last year, I had to not do that, mm-hmm, which was, I don't know if it was any harder or easier than anything else I had to do to get through this pandemic, but I couldn't do that.
Right.
Clients weren't sending me anywhere, and there was nowhere to go, even if I wanted to go. So that was strange for me, but not impossible. But now I look at the world again, you know, I am starting to hear from clients about when we have our conference next year in India, are you available? Can we talk about doing that? And so I'm looking forward to that, but I'm also I'm in this strange place right now where I have the right to fantasize about where would I go anywhere in the world if I could now get on a plane to do that, because it's likely that in different places around the world we might be able to do that soon.
Right, right. And that gets us also to the idea that we're starting to get, in the U.S., we're starting to get to this point where we can travel, and yet there are also, our minds want to say, well, then where do I want to go completely around the world? And that's not the scenario around the world. There are areas that are really struggling at this point still. Now, we're not just jumping on planes going anywhere anyway. You can't. But I'm talking about the normalcy. It starts to trigger that. It's something that I've, and on a totally different level, but if I, in the middle of a winter in the Northeast United States, if I head off to vacation where it's 80 degrees and sunny and I'm lying on a beach somewhere, my brain starts to think it's summer in the Northeastern United States.
Yeah, sure.
And it's not. And that's kind of that same feeling that as things start to loosen up, wherever people are, they start to perceive the rest of the space that way too. I guess that's maybe regional too, and maybe that leads to some of the problems we've had with people not cooperating.
I'm going to be curious to see how this has changed the culture that I'm going to be visiting.
Yes.
How, when they open up and when we can visit them.
Yes.
Will I see something substantially different? Will people be that different? Will they be making a concerted effort to return to things the way they were? You know, you can put in, you can double up on just trying to make it the way it was, mm-hmm. or do you allow for whatever changes it's made in you to just reveal themselves?
Yeah.
Will cultures change because of this?
You know, I almost think they have to some degree, but I think that's going to be a real good question. And where, how does it manifest? Is it going to manifest very easily noticeable? Or is it going to be something that's a lot more internal?
Okay, I'm going to make a prediction.
Uh-oh, hold on. There it is. There's the trumpets.
It's a prediction based on fact, scientific fact.
Or Torin making noises.
Torin one or the other. Sounding like a trumpet.
Yes.
Are you doing that again?
He does it well.
Every once in a while.
And yes.
All right. Claustrophobia, agoraphobia, and trumpophobia.
Could you please not make it in rooms that were closed in with you?
Yes.
Oh.
A trumpophilia. Well, I think for the last 4 years, the country was divided over that.
That's right. Good point.
Oh, a lot of points for that one. Yeah, well done. Yeah. Well done. Have to give you that one. So,
but based on fact, yes. I'm making this prediction.
Based on fact. Yes, go ahead.
Not
the trumpets are back. There's flourishes, as Shakespeare would say.
He can't resist. This is like shaving a haircut, you know? So here's my prediction.
Wow. They actually went a little higher that time, too.
They had the piccolo from the back.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, he waits for that.
I love him.
He gets a possible 20 on every gig.
Does he? Yeah.
We don't need you for the whole session.
I think he's one of the guys who is walking in the painting of the Spirit of 76. I think he's old. He's old.
He's way in the back.
But he's...
We don't need you for the whole session, but every now and then,
just pop in.
You know, pop in.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Punctuation.
If you're in the area,
it's like the triangle player. Ding.
Right.
So anyway, we didn't mean to interrupt.
Ah, my prediction is.
that was a record.
Very, very small.
Get in there
one.
Very quickly.
That sounded like he had just finished lunch. I wasn't quite sure with it.
And it might be. It might be. So maybe we should move on.
Don't want to.
Based on social scientific fact, studies of culture around the world that have gone on for the last 30, 50 years, anthropologists, sociologists, and in answer to the eternal question.
The eternal question. Or internal question, as the case may be, but go ahead.
Do cultures change, and to what degree, and what are the factors that cause the substantial or insignificant change?
Uh-huh.
All right?
Yes.
All right. The bottom line is that cultures don't change very fast, and they don't change fundamentally quickly.
Uh-huh.
Now, on the superficial level, you will perceive change and can perceive change in those cultures that are being impacted by various forces, either more quickly or more slowly. For example, like China.
Yeah.
There's no denying that over the last 20 to 30 years, China has changed substantially. You take a trip to China, you get off the plane, you look around, you see it's just the whole place looks totally different from the way it did. And people live differently. But the fundamentals of Chinese culture have not necessarily been impacted by whatever the forces were that caused this more superficial set of changes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think that's a pattern that we see everywhere around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some cultures aren't affected by those forces that create change, like is the case in China. There are other cultures that resist change,
mm-hmm.
and don't make the adjustment to inevitable forces that easily. But sooner or later, they will change too. My point here is that I think we are going to see cultures react to the pandemic at a more superficial level. So we'll see human behaviors change. I think interpersonal behaviors change to some degree. They may be more or less accommodating to the fact that they're now open to strangers when they can open up, or maybe not. I mean, we'll see. I can't predict what we'll see, but I think whatever it is we see, it's going to be more superficial than fundamental.
Not enough exposure to these circumstances to create internal change.
Real fundamental.
But external change.
I'm talking deep.
Yeah, yeah.
Culture.
The stuff that's come from thousands of years.
Right.
Or hundreds of years, depending on the culture, I guess.
Right, right, right. Whatever yes. that foundational culture is, that's the part that changes the slowest. Okay. And I think we're going to have the same reaction with COVID and people coming out of it. At a superficial level, we'll see some changes, and I'm not quite sure what they would be. But to predict the big picture, cue the trumpets.
Wow, the trumpets were late. Wow, we're going to dock your pay for that.
That used to be cute.
I think the fundamental cultures that we're going to encounter are still going to be there, and those attributes that make them who they are still going to be there. They're not going to have been fundamentally changed that deeply.
Okay, that's I think that's real interesting things. I mean, certainly there's going to be positive things that come out of this experience.
Hopefully, yes.
Well, there always is.
Right.
In the worst catastrophes, we end up with some positive things that come out of them.
In the darkest of days, there have been silver linings.
Right, right. And I think we can already see that in certain ways, anyhow. How long they will sustain themselves is a whole other question. I'm looking at, obviously, we've been mostly stuck in the United States for a year or so now. And looking at the way people have behaved and done things, both positive and negative, but certainly looking on the positive side of people taking it seriously and following like that. I think I said this back when we first did some podcast after we got into the COVID situation. It amazed me that the numbers of people in this country who actually did follow the advice of scientists and continued to follow it and adjusted to it when they learned more and more and all of that. I'm actually amazed that this culture really did do that, that the numbers were as big as they were. There's a lot of focus on the people who have not. I think it's easier to focus on that and see that. But an awful lot of people have followed the rules, and an awful lot of people have done the social distancing and have worn the masks and have behaved in that fashion. And I think that is not, it's not the perceived culture of the United States to do that. And I think, again, we're not talking in the United States, we are not talking a culture that can even remotely be compared with the Chinese culture and the depth of the Chinese culture and where it's come from, because I think the numbers of years that they have been in existence and sustaining it with that slow adjustment that you're talking about, slow adjustments over those years, we barely are a blip on the radar in comparison. Nevertheless, we have a whole perception of ourselves that says we are one thing. And then we sometimes behave, oftentimes behave in ways that say maybe we're not.
Well, you know, black and white is always an easy default. So, you know, it's easier to define yourself in black and white terms, any culture. But those black and white terms become very stereotypical and they fall apart upon close inspection, right? The U.S., like I think any culture, is a complicated culture. And we have always struggled with this issue of our Enlightenment traditions, mm-hmm. which is science, which is fact, which is the focus on human possibility and providing equal opportunity to all people. This is our Enlightenment tradition. But then we also have all these other traditions, you know, with the toxic individualism. And I think we spoke about that, where independent of rationality, I have the right to be as stupid as I want to be because yes. I'm an individual.
Yes.
And even if it threatens your health or public health or anybody else, I have the right to be as stupid as I want to be.
Right.
And so you have that toxic individualism multiplied over millions of people, and you get a highly unenlightened tradition. And so these two traditions, I think, have always lived in constant tension with each other in the U.S. And you're right, Tom, that looking back on what's happened over COVID, it's kind of a Petri dish, an experiment, and an example of how these two very fundamental strains of American culture, U.S. American culture, come in conflict with each other, mm-hmm. and how it all turns out at the end of the day. And in the middle of COVID, I felt a certain desperation and felt a bit overcome by seeing the anti-Enlightenment tradition so powerfully whipped up by the politicians, by Trump and by others.
Yes.
And I wasn't sure that this country really was going to come out of it with the Enlightenment tradition intact.
Right.
But we did, and we are, and I'm feeling optimistic about that. But I think one of the lessons I think we come out of this with is that we have to always be eternally vigilant
because
we have these different traditions.
And I think that kind of takes me in the direction of making you give more predictions here. Hold the trumpet. Mute the trumpet for me, please. Thank you.
You mentioned China.
Yes.
And we can, we can try to make some predictions around that, which would be absurd, I think, but we can try.
You want to predict China?
I immediately qualified what I was about to say.
The trumpeters didn't even show up.
They were aghast.
Never mind. The
they were aghast. They couldn't put the instrument to their mouths. They were...
I do have a quick question for Torin here, because he had a rather unique experience of his own. And I think we've talked about this a little bit in the past ones about COVID, but maybe not. Right prior to the United States being really taken into the COVID-19 situation, you traveled to Taiwan to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And you would plan Taiwan, but you canceled that, and flew to Hong Kong and back, and spent some time in Hong Kong. And they had already been involved, and they were in kind of a downward trend at the time, correct?
Well, they weren't in a downward trend, I don't think, but it was still, there was community spread of coronavirus, but it had spread to, I believe there were 130 cases at that time in Hong Kong, and 4 deaths. So it was just very early in that situation. And, it was a situation where in the U.S. there was not any reports of community spread yet. That actually happened when I was in Hong Kong. So I had already traveled there by that point. And so this was all happening, I'm reading about all this on the news that's going on in the U.S. that I'm going to be heading back to. But anyway, while in Hong Kong, it was still a time where the CDC was saying to Americans that you don't need to wear masks, and actually were saying there may be downsides to wearing masks.
Yes, the initial response was you don't need to wear the mask.
Yeah.
You shouldn't wear the mask.
Yeah. Right. And so I was there. The reason I went was to visit a high school friend who lives there and has lived there for many years. And so we were going around Hong Kong with no masks on, and everyone else was masked. We were not masked. So looking back,
you were lucky.
It's hard to just imagine now that that's
well, and
the
we
situation
lived,
where I wasn't masked.
Right, and we lived through a time when, looking back on it, we're all gonna say, oh my god, I survived, or I knew people who didn't, and how did we all get through that?
Right.
And I think Hong Kong, a Chinese culture with a very different political system and a different set of political values than mainland China, but Beijing, but still a Chinese culture, the way they dealt with it was in a very traditional Chinese way.
Yeah.
Right. And to your point, Tom, about China and making predictions about China, I think like what the rules tell us, what the research tells us, is that China's fundamental ways of doing things have not been really impacted. In fact, I think their whole response to the coronavirus is representative of fundamental Chinese values.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, and they're so entrenched, it would be hard to believe that a year and a half or whatever would have the, even a couple of years would have an impact, like you've been saying, have any more impact than external type of influence.
Right. Exactly. It's, you know, they measure time geologically.
Yeah.
In China.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we measure time here as if we're going to run out of it.
Right. Absolutely. Yes. As we are getting later in this podcast, let me pin you a little bit here. I want you to. Oh my! There it is.
is that the triangle or? Oh, that's the pin.
That's the pin.
It's just the pin.
Yeah.
Just the pin. I see.
So. What I'd like you to do is to give me a prediction for something you think might potentially change in the United States.
Wait, let me put this enormous oversized turban on my head. I feel like Johnny Carson.
The great Karnak. Yes. Karnak the Magnificent, I believe it was. Yes.
Always the Magnificent.
Yes. Let's see what you can come up with here. What do you think? What do you think will remain behind? And we've already established we think it's going to be external stuff because that's who we are. So what do you think is going to remain behind that we will see hanging around because of COVID-19?
In U.S. culture?
Yeah.
Yeah, I applying the same rules. We're going to start from the proposition that U.S. culture is fundamentally not going to change quickly. All right, applying the same knowledge that we have about how cultures change.
Sure.
All right, so those fundamental aspects of American culture, like what I've mentioned before, the Enlightenment tradition and what I would refer to as the non-Enlightenment tradition, they're going to be in constant tension still. Neither side's going to convince the other too much. There will be moments where one is in the ascendancy as one is in the descendancy. But for the most part, they're out there, they're on the table now. And I think, you know, the whole COVID experience kind of revealed all that to us. It tore the mirror away. If anyone was feeling complacent that non-Enlightenment America didn't exist anymore, it's out there.
It certainly is.
And if you were complacent in the opposite direction, well, you know, you have the Biden administration trying to enact all of these political and social decisions based on an Enlightenment tradition. So I think we're going to see more of the same.
Okay.
Is the bottom line. But interpersonally, I think a lot of people are going to be struggling with the adjustment, just as I've been and you've been. And reentry is not automatic. And I think, you know, the other day when I realized that, I felt much more comfortable. I said, oh, wait a minute, give yourself a break. Reentry is not going to be so easy. I think people may be struggling with that. You can't just start all over again.
Absolutely. And I think that it's one of the great reasons for not just throwing open the doors and saying, okay, everything's fine now. And which has been done in a few parts of the United States and maybe done in some other areas as well of the world, but certainly in some areas of the United States where they have just said, you know, do what you need to do, do what you want to do. Texas, I mean, they're not alone, but you open up the doors, but it's not even political in that sense. It's also like spring break has just happened here is happening in the United States. And that's a gathering of young people who are out because college is out for a week or so, and they head out and they go to the beaches and they have a great time and they do all sorts of ridiculous, crazy things, and hopefully nobody gets hurt. But it's a tradition, kind of, and it's something though that they've done this year to a degree. They did this year, at least in Florida, and I'm sure they probably did it in some other spots too. And yet the risk is very real still. And it's so it's one of those areas now we start looking at that, but you can't tell me what to do attitude creeping back in. And it's like you're talking about with things not altering quickly or at all.
I think they can only on the surface. Only on the surface. I mean, you can make behavioral change pretty quick by enforcement. You know, you make some laws, you make some policies, and you enforce it, and it changes pretty fast superficially. But that tradition of resistance to those kinds of things is always there.
Sure.
So there's always pushback, and then there's always resistance to the policies and the laws. To sometimes great degrees, and you can have, you know, an election where somebody like Trump gets in and they reinforce all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. this older tradition. So it's a lot of back and forth, but you're right. I mean, spring break is a perfect example of just people feeling like they want to believe that they have a greater right to enforce their toxic individualism than the concern of public health.
And, you know, one of the things that I'm thinking would be just great is that we can, now that we're all back in the studio and we're all able to be here and do this again, and hopefully everything will stay safe and we'll continue in this direction, which it appears it will. However, I'm really hoping that we will be able to move on and discuss other things without having the COVID-19 thing creep in every single time, because it's always there right now. And that's one of those changes. There's no way around it. Even with the vaccination, in this country anyway, if you get vaccinated and you say, well, what number shot are you? Are you one or two? How long has it been since your second one? And what did you get? Did you get Moderna? Did you get Pfizer? Did you get Johnson & Johnson? And those are the kinds of things. Those are our discussions.
So in terms of interpersonal relationships, yes, we'll get lots of superficial change. You know, instead of asking, hi, how you doing, and expecting a kind of meaningless response because of COVID, we don't even say, hi, how are you doing? Because we don't want to hear about, you know, anything that's too dangerous.
Right.
And we skip the whole thing and we just say, did you have your second shot yet?
Right. pretty much.
Because I'm not even talking to you unless I know what I'm
back
facing.
Stand back there, buddy. Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? It is time for us to wrap up another podcast here, and it is time for us to we're going to try to come back and give you another podcast that is we're going to try to spread to some other subjects and see what happens. I'm sure COVID will creep in and impact everything we say, but we'll do our best.
For a while, but the elephant is not going to be in the room forever.
No. Thank goodness. We can actually see that now that we haven't been able to for quite a while.
Right.
So thank you, Dean.
Thank you, Tom.
And Torin, did we introduce you today, or we just say you were here, sort of? Oh, there and there's Torin.
Oh, they came back.
He's back.
I don't know. I'm here.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. We'll see. He may not be here the next time. We'll see how it goes.
Who knows? Who knows where he'll be?
It's like Tiny Dancer in the little box. You know, it just close the lid.
Any more than that, we have to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
So Dean Foster.
Tom Peterson.
Yes. Well, this has been...
Oops. Your culture's showing.
Smell ya. Okay, listen, the way to get hold of us is oopscultureshow@gmail.com. And our Twitter handle is oopscultureshow. Whether this is the first episode or the third episode or whatever episode that you've listened to, you should really subscribe. That's the best way to go, really, honestly.
I know what I'm talking about.
All right, so just subscribe through iTunes or through wherever you get your podcasts from. Subscribe. Thank you.